All right, I guess we'll probably still be a couple people trickling into the room from the other room while we get started, but since we want to try to stay on track on time so we can all get to happy hour on time, you know, we'll start motivating this along. This afternoon, our first keynote speaker in this room, at least, is going to be Mr. Jason Carolan. Jason joined VOST in 2011 as Vice President of Product Development before being promoted to CTO. As CTO, he's responsible for the strategic direction of all VOST products and technology initiatives. Prior to VOST, he had nearly 20 years of experience in leadership positions in both small startups and large Fortune 100 enterprises, focused on product architecture, product management, and technical sales. His previous roles include over 10 years at Sun Microsystems, where he was a distinguished engineer in network and systems architecture, focused specifically on cloud computing and data center architectures, as well as director of cloud services engineering at VMware. He was the lead author of one of the first books highlighting the combined use of virtualization and automation. He also has several patents in networking, data center resource management, virtualization, and security. Please help me welcome Jason Carolan to Cloud Computing West.
Thanks, Ross. So I will try to keep us rolling here. So there's a lot of overlap between my talk and Tom's. So since you all got to see Tom, he did a great introduction into big data. But happy to be here. Just let me spend a couple minutes talking about VioWest. We have been in business since 99, and we're an IT outsourcing, IT infrastructure services provider based in Denver, Colorado. Our sort of claim to fame is not only a footprint that's increasingly diverse, 600,000 plus square feet of data center floor space, and 27 data centers across the United States, as well as a multiple 100 gig redundant network between those facilities for disaster recovery purposes, as well as production. But we also have our crown jewel is here in Las Vegas. It's the first publicly available, so available to anybody, Tier 4 design certified data center in the United States. And what Tier 4 design means is essentially it's fault tolerant, it's an autonomous system, it doesn't need humans to go move things around and change things for network failure, electrical system failure, and HVAC failures to take place. So completely autonomous, very secure platform, and we're really happy to be here with it in Las Vegas. So a little bit more about VioWest. We are a very comprehensive and flexible service provider. So we not only do great facilities like our new Lone Mountain data center, but we also run cloud services and network services and managed services as well. So really, if you think about it, we're a bespoke provider that can really help you with your specific needs around cloud, around mixing these types of use cases, which really puts us in a great spot to execute on this hybrid thing that you've also heard a bunch about today. If you were at an earlier session today, our VMs boot faster than 15 minutes. And what I would say is we do take a lot of pride in terms of the technology we use, how we build it. We're very transparent with our customers. We share the blueprints. I like to say we build it like you would build it, and we're very transparent with you. So enough about VioWest. Short history of cloud. So this has been an interesting, some other people in the room that I've worked with in the past, hi Jay, he would remember this, but Sun Microsystems and IBM and HP all in about 2000 came up with this thing called autonomic computing. Sun called it N1, and we were talking about self-healing systems and self-configuring and protecting and optimizing, and then you sort of bring that back 13, 14 years later. And while we've got a lot of great capabilities on the infrastructure, and we can actually change the dials, and cloud is a great solution, it still has a level of complexity to go manage it and run it. And I think some of the great stories we've heard today on how to really optimize that experience, how to look at the network as a big piece of that, and what does on-demand mean, and what are the ramifications of that? I mean, I think we're still very early on in this journey, and I think there's some great things to come as well. So the role of the CIO has also changed a lot, right? It used to be the CIO, CTO was a developer, and they had risen through the ranks, and now they've really become a portfolio manager. And the reason for that is because services are delivered in so many different ways today. I bet every single one of you uses SaaS. I bet every single one of you uses infrastructure as a service. And bringing that portfolio together to go run a production business is very challenging, hence they're a superhero as well. Because it really is about SLAs, it's about contracts, it's about business relationships, it's about trying to maintain a lot of the non-technical bits really to go make it work together. The other sort of challenge in the space, and I was joking about the 15-minute VM boot, but you know, clouds are a little nebulous in terms of defining it, right? And the reason why people are going to cloud is sort of the reason is also sort of the same reasons why it's a challenge, right? They're moving towards it because they need better predictability. They need a solution to solve for bursting. They need a solution to solve for unpredictable time periods. And not all clouds are created equal. So what you want is really a predictable platform that's trusted, that's transparent, and that helps you really solve those business problems so you can move on, you know, to deal with some other things as well. And I think this is a real, you know, a challenge today in terms of also looking at the storage demands on the platform. So not only do you have the network, you know, latency issues and network performance issues and unpredictability of how long it's going to take VMs to boot, but now we're facing, you know, this big data problem, which some of these reports, you know, would tell you that we're going to be dealing with 50 times more data in the next, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and we'll only be able to hire maybe 1 or 2% of more people than what we've got today, right? So that's a huge gap. And I think what Tom was talking about with some of the great technologies that HP has, autonomy being one of them, really helps you deal with that gap and turn it into some business value. But, you know, so what is big data? I think big data is something very relative to the type of company that you are. If you go ask Intel, they'll tell you, well, you're not big data unless you do 300 terabytes a day, and that's, you know, hundreds of petabytes a year, and that's big data. I mean, big data really is about running your business from a near real-time or real-time perspective and really getting a lot of value out of that business. And so I think, you know, the scientific pieces of big data and what the industry sort of does of taking these big data challenges and trying to rationalize them and deal with the granularity, that's just an aspect of it. It's driving some great technology and innovation in this space, but at the end of the day, you're getting data from systems that you probably only dreamed about in the past to really make a difference in your business. And in order to do that, you've got to have compute, you've got to have network, you've got to have really smart people. I know Tom Hopkins said, you know, DevOps and continuous delivery and go hire a bunch of those people. Well, go hire all the math people that you can find too, because that's really the other challenge with this. If you think about 50 times more data, who's going to sort through the algorithms to go, you know, actually figure out how to go find that business value within that data? So my daughter asked me, did this cow, which has a RFID tag on it, and she's a 6-year-old vegan. And she's like, is that cow still alive? And I'm like, well, I don't know. But the point of my presentation was, well, we can actually track that cow these days. So, and if you look at the way the European regulatory commissions have tracked agriculture and crops and, you know, grapes and things like that for a long time, the U.S. has gotten into it rather recently. But the first, you know, the first thing the FDA sort of did in the United States was to put together a program to track drugs. And now they're putting together programs to track our food supply. And then what's also kind of ironic is they're putting together programs that the healthcare world, you know, with healthcare information management systems and exchanges, are actually now we're going to track the humans, right, and try to figure out what, you know, issues and challenges we have. So, you know, I think that's one aspect of it. I remember a calculation I did probably 7 or 8 years ago, and I think every cow on the planet was generating about 4 terabytes of data. I'm sure that's changed. But, you know, Tom talked about this as well, just as some other examples here. This is the St. Anthony Falls Bridge in Minneapolis, which unfortunately had some structural issues a few years ago and collapsed. This new bridge has about 250 sensors that are built in as part of the design. That thing generates about 300 gigs of data a day. So if you think about all these things that are in our lives that are starting to really generate this, then you go take this mobile revolution that's happening and how much data we generate with our cell phones. And I had a good conversation with somebody from AT&T the other day, and they, a couple of years ago, had some challenges at South by Southwest, and a bunch of people were tweeting, you know, AT&T fail on their Twitter accounts, and Twitter devices have hash codes of geocode information, so they know where those things are coming from. And so they used that data to go re-architect their cellular network and came up with some new designs to bring better high-density cell platforms to those areas. So again, the example here is these big data use cases are everywhere, and they're increasingly everywhere. And what they mean and how they change the way you do business really depends on the type of business that you're in, but it's real. Tom talked about this as well. You know, the structured, unstructured, that analogy with his kids was fabulous. But the amount of technology changes that are really happening in this space to go deal with it really require the cloud as an underpinning for that, because it really requires that ability to fail fast, to bring up different types of environments, MongoDB, Cassandra, Hadoop, et cetera, to be able to go test out the analytics on this unstructured or semi-structured data, and then be able to bring that back into your business. So the marriage of big data and cloud is really the value of this whole hybrid compute model that we're undertaking these days. And I'll talk about that in just a second. The other thing that's a bit of a challenge, thought there was a graph here. The other sort of challenge is that we're also in the middle of these storage wars with some people that make web browsers and cell phone devices and then ship books, which, you know, really means, you know, when that data becomes an important part of your business and you're starting to make real-time decisions based on that data, where that data is really important. And I think there's some great use cases for Amazon. I think there's great use cases for Google. But you've got to think that those are the crown jewels, right? The security models need to be well understood. The protection mechanisms need to be well understood. The service levels need to be well understood. Has anybody ever tried to call Amazon? Has anybody tried? I've never tried. I'm not even sure what that is. Do they even have a phone number? I'm not sure. So when things go wrong, when things go down, when the network doesn't work, when files aren't getting to where they need to be and your business stops, it's really nice to have somebody to go, you know, pick up the phone and harass. So great use cases for these, and I'm not, you know, well, it sounds like I'm knocking them. I'm not. I mean, there's just, you know, be careful out there, I guess, is the comment. This is a UC Berkeley study that started in 2008, actually really started in 2003. UC Berkeley did a study of what a dollar would buy you in terms of compute, network, and storage. And I don't know where my other graphics went there, but so back in 2003, a dollar would buy you, you know, a little bit of compute, hardly any storage, and there's a blue line there somewhere, but I'm not sure where it is. In 2008, a dollar would buy you a whole bunch more of compute. And here in 2012, I did my own sort of expansion of this study and did some other calculations. So it'll buy you a lot more compute, a lot more disk. What's not growing very rapidly here? And I think somebody else touched on it too. It's the network, right? The network really is the sort of bottleneck to all of this, which really means for hybrid to work, to go off-prem to on-prem, to look at these different types of models, you really start to look at, you know, location and latency, and you know, not all data centers are very well connected to the other ones in your facility. So really, the architecture of the network really plays a huge role in this. So why hybrid solutions? Well, number one, we're going there, right? Everybody's going to have hybrid. Everybody's going to have multi-cloud, but it's physics, right? And the reason why that network growth rate is still there is because of physics. We haven't figured out how to do FTL. We have, you know, Star Trek is not a reality. Warp drives are not a reality yet. And so we've got to go deal with this network problem. And where we see a lot of the use cases on this is really being able to bring your private cloud, your Oracle Exadata, your whatever it is that you've optimized your platforms on, next to a cloud platform within the data center that can be optimized with a network that's local within that facility. There's also some great technologies from A10 and from Riverbed that help you deal with compression and deal with, you know, the transfer of these bits across the wire. But I think the most optimal condition for a hybrid is really sitting in the data center where you've got backplane access so that you can actually bring these services together. And when you've got the backplane access, you're sitting on top of routers, you're sitting on top of very fast optical gear, you're cooking with gas, not necessarily that gas, but more like that gas. And allows you to really bring those different technologies very seamlessly together with multi-gig networks, so you can move between your existing environment and the data that you're collecting in Oracle or Autonomy or Hadoop, along with, you know, public cloud storage, you know, storage as a service, security as a service, and all the other things that a provider can bring to bear for you. So hybrid is now, and we have customers that are doing this every single day. So they're moving into our data centers, building out their private cloud platforms, bringing in their weird weird Oracle Exadata stuff, whatever the, you know, whatever those monolithic, you can't just go buy it on Amazon platforms might be, and they're sticking it right next to our cloud so they can burst into our cloud, they can move their files there, and they have optionality. And it's predictable, and it's secure. So this is a really good use case of hybrid, and I think hybrid, you know, certainly is there today. The other issue is really security. So, you know, one of the big differences probably for a provider versus a lot of small to medium enterprises, the number of security staff we have on staff, the amount of investment we make in security, right? And there's a lot of data and statistics on security. Again, when the data is your crown jewels, you want to pay a lot of attention to this. Compliance is also another big area. So, you know, looking at healthcare, the HIPAA omnibus rule changes that happened this year, you know, really put everybody in the crosshairs for dealing with data breaches of personal health information. Up to $1.5 million per breach, right? So it's serious fines from the Health and Human Services, and they don't just come knocking, they come with marshals. Security and compliance and configuration management and all these things that sort of fit into these processes very seriously when you go look at a cloud provider, which is some of the reasons why, you know, really if you've ever tried to call Amazon, that's not just a joke, but I mean, imagine having a subpoena with Amazon and trying to figure out where your data is and how to prove that. So, you know, I think there's some great use cases in hybrid. I think we're really at the beginning of it here. And, you know, data is a big part of that equation. But I think increasingly it's really about how you bring that value to your business and use these technologies to help you with that. Not too